This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 38 for August 4th, 2011. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live on live stream from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska, and posted each week on the AverageGuy.tv. You can contact the show, send us an email, podcast@theAverageGuy.tv. Follow me on Twitter, just at Jay Collison, or you can find us on Facebook, and that's actually a site we've been trying to build out as of late, although with all the guys on vacation, there hasn't been as much activity as I was hoping. But go out to Facebook and search The Average Guy Podcast. We post some the show. When we post the show, we post a link to it out there, as well as we're looking for some discussion from you on this or any prior podcast. I should say maybe prior or future podcasts that we do. Just about everybody on the planet, with Facebook having 750 million users, just about everybody who can get to the internet is probably out there, and it's a lot easier than creating your own forums that you have to sign up for, so we, for now, are moving our forums into Facebook. Give it a try. Let us know how it works, and just drop us a line. Again, podcast@theAverageGuy.tv. Well, tonight, the couple guys that I normally have as regulars are out. One is on vacation and one is out on a work vacation of sort. Both Christian and Andrew are out tonight. But I have the next best thing to Christian, and that's Christian's dad. Gary, how are you doing this evening?
Just fine, thanks.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Last week, we kind of had what I called a router meltdown, although it really ended up being a gym meltdown. at the end of the day, I had done an evening run or an afternoon run in the heat, and I wasn't feeling real well when I came home. The technology wasn't working. I just started unplugging things, hoping and rebooting stuff, hoping that would fix it. The router would not find the default gateway for the internet. Of course, if you know what that is, you know you can't get to the internet if that's if you don't have your default gateway in there and it working right and being recognized, no internet. So I couldn't get anything to work. And of course, you guys, you and Christian, were scheduled to be on the show, and you were trying to be helpful. One of the funniest moments there was when Christian said, "Well, why don't you just use the PC that you're talking to me on? Because I am on my phone, just typing madly away on Skype, trying to, you know, tell you guys, things aren't working."
That's what we couldn't understand, is how are you on Skype and you're telling me you couldn't connect?
Yeah, it was. And so Christian was like, "Why don't we just use the PC?" I'm like, "No, I'm on my phone." And then there was a pause for a second, and Christian was like, "Oh." So it was quite an interesting night. By the end of the night, I physically just didn't even feel good. I think I had run in the heat too long, maybe not enough fluids, the stress of the podcast, and we just called it. And so last week we did a random, Rich's random podcast generator on Saturday, or actually on Sunday afternoon, and stuck that in as show number 37. So if you're wondering what the heck happened and you just listened to a two-hour marathon show that sounded nothing like the Home Tech Podcast, I shouldn't say nothing. It probably sounded a little bit like it. That was it. One more thing I want to remind folks, we have changed, or we are in the midst of changing, our RSS feed. So if you download this podcast through iTunes, you shouldn't have any problem. I should be able to switch those feeds without you noticing. But just in case you're not, or you did a manual feed, maybe through a Zune player or some other kind of podcatcher device, I have posted the new RSS feed out to the site, theAverageGuy.tv. Go ahead and grab that, pull it down, and change that out. Over the next couple months, we'll be switching that feed completely over, and probably by the end of September, it will no longer work. So that you'll want to do if you want to keep getting the Home Tech Podcast in your RSS reader. All right, Gary, we've got a lot of things to talk about tonight. Between the two of us, we will have a full and packed show. First thing I want to talk to you about, though, is Subsonic. I have been getting, and we talked with Christian a little bit about this 2 weeks ago. I know he's developing a Subsonic add-in for the Windows Home Server platform. But since I had you on the show, and you're the godfather of Subsonic, I think, you might know more about it than anybody, at least that I know. Take me back a ways to the early days of this. I kind of know why you went to it, but what were some of the motivating factors? Why did you choose that? What was it like getting it set up? Just kind of walk me through the story of how you got involved with using Subsonic. Maybe tell the listeners, if they don't know what that is, what Subsonic is first.
Yeah, Subsonic is basically a personal media website, for lack of a better definition. It enables you to set up a web front end to stream all of your media music and video from a local server on your network. So if you have a home video or you have your MP3 collection, whatever, you can go to a website, and I'm gonna post the link. It's up there right now on Usenet. And if you click on that link, you will get into my Subsonic website. And everything that you see is stored on a server just to my left right here in the basement. And basically, it's our personal collection. And if you look at the top left side, just below the Subsonic heading, there's a drop-down. And right now it's selected on all folders, but you can select the subfolders for like videos and recorded TV and the different music subdirectories that I have. Some of this that you'll see in those subdirectories are basically designed for experimentation and testing that I do with a lot of people on the Subsonic forums when they're having difficulty. I've set up areas to work out certain problems. So that's basically what it is. How did I get started? Well, the whole issue started when I bought a Hewlett-Packard Media Smart server, which is actually right here in the old background.
Yeah.
And
what's the model on that?
That's an EX485.
Okay.
HP Media Smart server, and it came with a software package was called Twonky Media. And part of the big attraction to this advertising back, and this is going back about 3 years ago, my daughter had her iTunes, Christian had his, I had music that I had collected in various places. So we all had music that was all over the house. So one of the big attractions to the Media Smart Center was it advertised this, you put this connector software on each PC, and that what it was supposed to do in theory was to go through all of the files on everybody's PCs and consolidate a copy of all the media and put it on the home server for central access and backup. And as I got into it further and further, I'm like, yeah, that's cool. Cause I was, you know, I wanted that centralization, that centralized library, the backup feature so that I could listen to the kids' music, they could listen to mine. But in addition to that, this Twonky Media promised that you could access it from the internet. So I thought, you know, that's really cool. I want to do that. The only problem is that whenever you ran Twonky Media on the original EX485, it absolutely maxed out the CPU cycles to 100%, and the server was basically useless for anything else after that. It took forever and a day to index all the files on that server. And what I later came to find out was that if any of the files had any kind of a problem in them, it just gummed up the whole process, and you basically never completed indexing the files, and it just rendered your server useless. And that's when, you know, I honestly think I worked on it for over a year.
Really?
Trying to sort it out, trying to make it work, trying to figure out what was the problem, testing updates, trying to go to Twonky and doing a generic install. I mean, I tried everything to figure out what was the problem and how to fix it, and I got nowhere. So finally, I just said, heck with this. And that's when I started looking for an alternative. And I came, actually, there was another one that some guy had written. Can't remember the name of it now, but it was out there for a while. It wasn't too bad. It was kind of the same concept. It worked a little better, but it wasn't very refined, and it was kind of buggy, and you really had to know a lot about transcoding and putting things together by hand in order to get it to work. So I kind of gave up on that one, and that's when I stumbled upon Subsonic. originally, when I first got in here, Subsonic was really only music. But it did it perfect. Mm. And, you know, you could stream. It didn't hog the CPU cycles. It indexed quickly. It had a nice, clean interface. And I use Chrome for the front end. I use IE9 for most everything, but Chrome has a really good, clean look and feel to it as a front end for Subsonic. So that's what I adopted for the front end for Subsonic. And it's just been a labor of love. It continues to evolve. The developer, Sindre Mies, out of Oslo, Norway, he releases frequent updates, frequent betas. He'll answer your emails. He follows his forums, and he really works hard to incorporate the suggestions of the user community. So I've just, you know, it really has been an answer to a problem that we had, and it continues to evolve and become more useful. And most recently, we've really done a lot of work. Well, I've done a lot of work because Christian doesn't seem to be that interested in it, but I've gotten the video aspect of it to work. And recently, we put in a Seton tuner card on our HTPC upstairs to record television. The recorded TV automatically backs up to the home server, and then Subsonic accesses that archive so that they can watch television on Subsonic. Like Christian can watch any recorded TV while he's off at South Dakota School of Mines with NASA. And my daughter will be going to school in the fall. She's going away to college. So, Dad, what am I going to do with, you know, who can dance and what's all the other stuff? And I said, it'll all be recorded. All you got to do is go on the Subsonic site. It'll all be under recorded TV. You can watch all your favorite shows whenever you have time. So she's just absolutely thrilled. And it all records in 1080i. So if they have a decent enough internet connection, it's decent 1080i recorded TV. It plays back beautiful if you've got she's got a 15-inch Dell with the 1920 by 1080 screen. So she's got an HD screen. So she can watch it in full resolution on her little laptop, and she's going to be in her glory.
Gary, did Subsonic index the music like Twonky did? Does it have a client that finds music on the PCs and brings it to a central location like Twonky did?
No, that's the one thing it doesn't do, but that's also one of the things that Twonky never really did. I found that it was supposed to be doing that, but it was generating tons of errors. And like I say, that was one of the reasons that that we looked for an alternative.
And who has more music in your house, you or Christian?
Well, I do, mostly because I've got a lot of friends who basically were back in the days of, what was it, Napster?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they all have their external hard drives. And when they come over to the house, they bring their external hard drives. And,
I don't need to know about this.
and we have our little party, and yeah, we're good to go. So.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the bandwidth from your experience? Now, you guys have pretty good up speed there where you're at in Buffalo, but what do you think's the minimum? If I were to put this in, or someone was thinking about putting it in, what would be their minimum up and down speeds to really make this work, you think?
Well, for your audio, and again, a lot depends. It's pretty simple to calculate if you know just a little bit of the basics of bandwidth. Your typical MP3 is going to be 256 kilobits per second. That's a good quality MP3. You know, if you got a high-end FLAC, what are you going to be up around 1500 kilobits per second for upside bandwidth? So if you're going to get into like really high fidelity recordings, which most people probably aren't, 2 megabits per second up is probably sufficient for one or two users at a time. Now, if you're down around 256 kilobits per second on an average on a typical MP3, then, you know, with 2 megabits per second going up, you can have as many as 8 users online and probably still service them. So you need to factor in the quality and how many users at the same time you're likely to be servicing. So in our particular case, yeah, we've got, for the United States, we've got excellent upside. I typically can push, I've done bandwidth speed tests from Buffalo to Clifton, New Jersey, and pushed 30 megabits per second.
Up?
Yeah.
Wow.
So nice. So with that kind of capability to put it out, it's almost pretty difficult to overload me unless I get 5 or 6 guys doing high-res video at the same time.
Right. And from a video, so some of our listeners are in maybe some rural communities, or, you know, they're getting a half a meg to a meg up, maybe even a little bit less. I know somebody who's getting 384 up. Is that going to at least be able to stream 1 or 2 users on that, or is that going to stretch it?
There's other things that you can do. There's a lot of flexibility built into the transcoding, and you can throttle the bitstream. So you can transcode your upstream to lower the bandwidth going out to fit the bandwidth that you have. And I would say for music, you're probably hard-pressed to find somebody whose bandwidth is so low that they wouldn't be able to use this for music. When you get into video and the quality of the video, then you've got different issues. But for music, for most people, you shouldn't have any difficulty. And one of the things that I was having a bit of a problem with was on my cell phone. Subsonic also has an app for Android phones, and there are other developers that sell third-party apps for the iPhone that you can use to connect to your Subsonic site over your cell phone. And I use this quite a bit. I'll connect my phone to Subsonic over the 3G network, and then I'll turn on my Bluetooth on my cell phone and connect it to my car stereo when we're on the highway. And that way I have complete access to my audio library. You know, I've got it's showing like over 4,600 hours worth of music on the site. So it's crystal clear, uninterrupted, commercial-free music wherever you have a 3G signal connected to your stereo in your car. And one of the things that I was finding is that when you get a weak 3G signal and you start to get a bandwidth drop off, then you have some difficulty maintaining the stream. So what I did was I did a lot of research, and one of the codecs that's really, really good for maintaining quality at low bandwidth is the OGG format. OGG.
Uh-huh.
So sure. What I have set up on Subsonic is that anytime it answers a demand for music over the Android phone player, it automatically transcodes all the music down into Q5 OGG, which is about 100. It translates to roughly about 110 kilobits per second.
Okay.
So even if I've got like a 256 kbps or 320k MP3 that I'm listening to, Subsonic is downsizing that to about 110 and sending it over OGG format to play on the phone, and I get just about the same sound quality at approximately a third of the bandwidth. So I rarely ever run into a problem where the 3G isn't fast enough to keep up with the data stream. So there's a lot of, that's one of the things I liked about Subsonic, is that really, if you had the patience and the perseverance to really dig under the hood and understand what was going on, you could customize it to your hardware, to your particular circumstance, to get the best performance that's possible with the hardware, the bandwidth, and so on that you have in your control. So you can modify it to your needs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's and then how much time did you have to spend in researching some of that? Is that fairly intuitive, or are those setups maybe a little more advanced?
Yeah, it's a labor of love.
Okay,
You know, it's the type of thing. I mean, when I first started this, I didn't even know what transcoding was.
Sure.
You know, an MP3 was music. Yeah, okay, I listened to music. But then when I started to get, you know, into bit rates and transcoding in different formats and why is one better than the other and so on, and then you go into the engines that it uses subsonic underneath it, it's using FFmpeg and lame transcoder to do all of this in the background. So you kind of have to do some research into the settings that are used to set that up and how to take advantage of those tools in order to make those modifications to make this work for your hardware the best that it can.
So can the average guy set this up, not change any of those settings, and pretty much have it work? Or is there kind of, you know, a default that will work for most people, or do you got to kind of dig in under the hood to make it work?
No, I think for the average person that has a typical MP3 library, I think you can just go with the standard installation and set it up and get a good result. Typically, what I see happening on the user forum, though, is people get their basic setup up and running, then they want to do more. And then they, well, how do I do that? And how do I, and what, well, gee, I see you did that. So it's the type of program that's really fun because it does suck you into learning more and more. Yeah. That's one of the things I really like about it. It just invites you to go deeper and deeper and deeper to get more and more and more out of it. And like anything else, the more time and effort you put into it, the more you get out of it.
Sure. Talk a little bit about, Gary, talk a little bit about the setup that you have from a hardware perspective. And you guys might be a little above the average when it comes to that kind of hardware. I know what Christian has, but and that's okay. But what kind of hardware do you have that on now?
Yeah, we do have a pretty decent hardware setup. Right now, the public site that I posted the link to is on a Xeon quad core CPU, 65-watt total power consumption CPU, running at I think 2.83 gigahertz with 8 gigs of RAM on a Supermicro server motherboard. And I think I've got 6 2-terabyte hard drives on that system, which goes back to our early conversation about I do buy a lot of hard drives.
Yeah, we'll talk about that here in a little bit. Yeah. But
if you're interested in just subsonic to serve up music inside your network and to access it like I do on a phone, you can set that up on an Atom. On an Intel Atom based CPU on a little mini thing with as much of a hard drive as you want. A 500 gigabytes a hard drive space will hold a lot of MP3s.
Yeah, it sure will.
And what I see a lot of guys doing, and in fact I'm probably eventually gonna do, is go and build a more low powered type server just for serving up music. And in which case I would probably be going with an Atom based PC that only uses like maybe 10 watts of power to reduce the power consumption so that, you know, I can leave it on 24/7 and it isn't running the electric meter crazy.
Yeah. Do you guys leave that on, that server on 24/7, or you shut that thing down at night?
That one we leave on 24/7 only because we know that other people are logging into it, and we never know when we want to log into
it.
So we keep that one on, and that's our domain controller too on the network.
Okay.
So that stays on 24/7. My Windows Home server, which is right next to it, in the same configuration. Basically, it's an AMD based motherboard. What am I running? It's an AMD 890 FXA GD70 MSI motherboard with 2 gigabit LAN ports built into the motherboard, and that's on our Windows Home server. And I host another Subsonic site internally on that. That's not for the public. That we kind of put our family video stuff on.
Sure.
So, you know, we don't, some stuff we don't want out in the public domain. So, and that is running Windows Home Server 2011, but we have Lights Out on that. So Lights Out will put that to sleep whenever nobody's logged onto the network. So the nice part about it is that we can remote desktop into the server that's on 24/7, and we can access the rest of the network throughout the house. Once we log in, we kick up the home server, and then we can remote connect to any of the computers on the network inside the house.
Yeah.
That's what Christian does when he's when he's out and about. He's got his little netbook with him. He'll remote desktop into the PC up in his bedroom, the monster quad, or what is it, a 6-core AMD.
Yeah,
and
the beast, as we like to call it.
Yeah, and then he rules the roost from wherever he is.
Yeah, yeah.
And the kids at NASA are getting a big kick out of that.
he's in camp, right? He's at NASA camp.
Yeah,
this week. So
it's a 2-week collegiate experience with sponsored by NASA.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Obama. All expenses paid.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's tearing it up. So, Christian, we wish you the best as you're having a good time there. Somebody asked in chat, does Subsonic require a lot of RAM
no.
to run? Okay.
No, typically it will reserve everything. Subsonic is based on Java platform, so it runs a Java platform, and when you open the Subsonic control panel, you'll see that the default settings reserve 100 megabytes of RAM for the Java space that it runs. And we've been finding that as the library grows in size, that the 100 megabytes is typically not enough if you have a sizable library. So right now, my recommendation for most people is 256 megabytes of RAM allocated to, you know, the Java needs.
Sure.
So and in today's environment, that's really not much.
Yeah. Yeah. I run on the system that I run a lot of the show stuff on, that we're actually broadcasting on tonight. You know, that's a box that I got 4 gig on, and I do some virtualization on it, and I just bought 4 more gig to kind of boost that thing up. And I remember when 4 was a lot, and 8 seems, Moore's Law kicked in on me a year ago, almost to the day. So on August 3rd, 2010, I bought this memory, 4 gig. It was $97, I think, back then. Same memory. In fact, I went back to Newegg, clicked on the invoice link. It took me right to the same exact memory, $35.
Yeah. No, it's dropped like a sinker.
Yeah.
And I think nowadays, if you're running a Windows 2003 code base, Windows XP code base, obviously, I think, you know, 4 gigabytes is all you need. For most people, you know, with a 32-bit system, you can't use more than 4 gigabytes anyway.
Right.
So, but even so, if you're running that, you probably want the 4 gigs. And with your 64-bit systems now, 8 gigabyte is pretty much standardized. I mean, most 4 gigabits on anything you're buying today is minimum if you're going to run 64-bit operating system. And even now, you go on Newegg and you look at some of these NetTop boxes, which there's some interesting developments there with the AMD 350 series that have come out. But almost everything you buy is going to have at least 200 or at least 2 gigs of memory.
Yeah, and I bought that HP DM1Z that's running that AMD, and it came with 3 minimum. So that was, you know, it's 64-bit software. I can upgrade that to, I think, 6 is the max that it'll let me upgrade that for 6. But it runs great. I think an SSD drive is the next upgrade for that little laptop. I think that would speed things up even more if I was running an SSD hard drive And been waiting for the prices on some of those things to come down. But certainly RAM has been one of those things that I guess, you know, right after the earthquake in Japan, RAM prices spiked for fear that they wouldn't be able to produce it. That must have changed because it's just dropping like a rock.
After today's 500-point drop in the Dow, I'll bet they'll be coming down pretty soon.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Gas or oil dropped to, what was it, $84 a barrel today. So.
Yeah, I saw it as low as 81 at one point during the day today. So
commodities have taken it looks like it was a turnaround day for commodities. So that really portends well for the price of components.
Yeah. Yeah, so good for us.
Yeah.
And although I did look at some Core i5 and Core i7 chips to upgrade because the board, I have a Gigabyte board that I bought purposely, you know, to be able to go an i5 or an i7 in the future. And those chips have stayed pretty stable. Their price is about the same today as it was about a year ago. And the Core i3 chip that I put in there, its price hasn't changed at all in a year, which was surprising to me. I thought that would have dropped some. So,
my observation has been that the Intel CPUs don't seem to drop in price. And if anything, what I've noticed is that when they start to reach end of life, they actually go up in price.
Yeah.
Because they get hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big craze a while back with these EX485s to upgrade the Celeron CPU that came with them up to a 5200.
Right.
And there were two versions of the 5200. One of them worked well with the BIOS that's in the 485, the SLAY model. And then there's another version that came out later that has some slight differences in the microcode and doesn't work well with the BIOS of the 485, and you can't put the computer to sleep with the newer version. So now that older 5200 chip is like a hen's tooth.
Yeah.
And you know, anybody that's got one's gonna hold you up, you know, highway robbery places to buy.
Well,
one.
Not unlike those WRT 54G wireless routers, the Linksys wireless routers, that version 1, 2, and 3 you could kind of hack. They had more RAM on them, and those things are still expensive if you go to try and buy them on eBay, because you know, folks, you can hack tomato or whatever they call that on there, and it's an intelligent router where after version 4 you could no longer, they stripped all that stuff out. So
I think the other big attraction for that router is that the darn thing was built like a Sherman tank. I don't think, it's amazing how many people still have them, still run them, and they still run well. And this is a topic I've talked about many times, is that most routers today don't have sufficient cooling in the way they're designed. And after about 2 years, they start to burn themselves out.
Yeah, I'm on that cycle. In fact, I was afraid last week when I was having connectivity problems. The very first thing as I did is, and I have the router, I have my router mounted on the wall just up over there. It sits flush against the wall, and I just put my hand against it to see how hot it really was, and it was cool. And I mount it there to get good ventilation because I have hidden routers underneath books and stack things on top of them. And I, you know, within a couple months of not giving them proper ventilation. And I guess that's one of those things that folks probably need to know, is on some of those routers, you really do need to give them the proper amount of ventilation or they will burn out on you.
Okay, and just if anybody is logged on to my Subsonic site, I saw
I got the login when I went to that link that you sent me.
Oh, I'm sorry, I should have mentioned that. All you have to do is enter guest for username and password.
Okay.
And that'll take it.
Perfect.
I thought that was on the screen.
Oh, you know what? I may not have read it. I was trying to run the podcast at the same time.
Yeah, so. I know. I'm finding it hard to read and talk at the same time. But
yeah, it's a challenge to get it all in. You don't either. You're reading chat, or you're not listening to what your guest is saying.
I was just going to mention that right in the left column at the top under the shortcut section, there are some videos under the link that's labeled how to park your car. Some of the people might enjoy watching those. Those are kind of fun.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, the home video when I was trying to teach Christian how to do parallel parking. So
some of the guys have gotten in and made some good comments about that. So I'll include that link in the show notes. And if the folks who are listening to the recorded version, if they want to take a peek at that and see what a subsonic setup looks like. Is there, Gary, any cost for the software?
No. Well, no, it's a free download. But what he does is after 30 days, he has a handful of what they call premium features that he asks for a donation of, I think, 10 euros is the minimum, which is what, about 15 bucks?
Right.
And what that does is it allows you to stream to the Android device or any mobile device, and it gives you the ability to use his redirection service. I set up maplegrovepartners.subsonic.org. So what that does is it's looking up on his server, subsonic.org, and it uses that library that he has to redirect to my IP and port number to make the connection to the server. So there's a few features in there that you lose access to after 30 days if you don't make a donation.
Okay. And that's still fairly inexpensive if you're gonna make that through PayPal or something like that, I would assume. Do I need to notify my ISP to get a port working, or does that come across port 80, which is blocked by some ISPs, or how does that work?
That's probably the biggest hurdle to setting this up, that there's extensive documentation that has been written on the website in the forums in the tutorial section. But probably the biggest hurdle for the average guy with subsonic is setting up the external access feature. What I recommend is that my first recommendation right up front is never use port 80 or port 443. It just creates too many problems because too many other things want that port, like Windows Home Server, and too many ISPs will either monitor, throttle, or block those ports and or give you a hard time if they see traffic on them. So I always tell everybody, use like 8080, 8085 for the HTTP connection, and use like 450, 455, something like that for the SSL connection. You'll notice that when you do log into the link, it'll give you the warning about SSL. That's because I have mine enabled to make the connection over SSL, but I don't have a certificate. So you'll get the warning. Just ignore the warning, proceed to the website to make the logon, and then you'll notice that you're connected over an SSL connection. That actually gets done internally in subsonic. But the most difficult aspect of getting this set up for most people is setting up the port forwarding on your router to route the port that you assigned to subsonic to the server that's hosting subsonic. So first you have to go into the subsonic control panel. You have to tell subsonic which port you want to run on. Once you do that, then you have to go to your router and you have to set up a port forwarding rule that you're going to forward that port 8085, let's say, for HTTP access to the internal IP address that you're using to host subsonic. Okay. So in my case, I'm at 192.168.1.252
internally.
And so I have my port forwarding set up so that when that 8092 port request comes in, it forwards to 252. Subsonic responds. It gets it through 8092, and then it transfers it to port 452 SSL to make the response and the connection for the viewer. Yeah.
And that actually sounds a lot harder than it is. I do find some folks, if they haven't messed around with port forwarding before or the way the ports work on your PC, that can be a little intimidating at first. But if you just think of it like addresses on the street and your IP address is the street name, right. It makes a lot more sense. And so, you know, if you're going to send a piece of mail to somebody and they're not home, or they've put up a forwarding, an address forwarding through the post office, post office will just automatically take it to that next address. So don't be intimidated by port forwarding or by addressing with the IP address. That really, once you've done it once or twice, that comes pretty easy.
That, and I've really, really, I've worked with another guy that made an outline of the installation process, and we've really refined the tutorials. Let me see if I can pull it up here.
Is that on the Subsonic site in the forums?
That's where I'm just grabbing here. Cool. Copy.
Now, Gary, you're big in the Subsonic forums, right? I mean, you're kind of one of the main guys out there, or is Christian built you up too much in that area?
No, I'm probably the number one poster on the forum, and I really did that in revenge of HP and Talkie Media, because I just, you know, it was like, yeah, this is how it was supposed to be done, you dummies. So I really did put a lot of energy into supporting the developer and helping him, you know, get the forum well supported and well active so that he would get more users.
Sure.
And that really did stimulate a lot of interest in Subsonic, because now the users really felt like they were getting the attention they needed to solve the problems that they were having.
Good.
So I just posted the link to the tutorials there in the,
excellent,
in the chat.
Let me grab that real fast and add it to our show notes so I can put that out on our site when we put the notes out there, so folks who are listening on the recorded version can do that. Gary, do you go by a particular handle there at the Subsonic forums, that if folks were newbies and wanted to DM you in some way or know who you were, are you willing to give that out?
Yeah, that's not a problem. Any post that you see by GJ51, and there's usually half a dozen of them up there at any one time, but okay. Actually I'm not on the main login page right now.
Because you're talking to me, right?
No, there's apparently been a few posts since I was last on.
Yeah.
But yeah, GJ51 is the handle up there, and you know, don't be afraid to send me a PM if you got a question or post in one of the topics. And usually there's a good group of guys there, and one of the things I really like about it is the forum is really got a positive environment. There's not a lot of snipers.
That's good.
Not a lot of people causing a lot of problems and bad mouthing each other, and usually they get shouted down pretty quick when they rear their ugly head. So
yeah,
it's really pretty much try to keep it in a positive vein of helping people with the problems that they're having and helping them sort out the issues that they're struggling with. And it's funny because, like I say, you if you read through some of these posts, you'll really get a flavor for how most of these guys have really gone beyond the basics, and now they're looking for help on how to modify menus and how to change theme colors and just all kinds of things that you'd have never really initially thought would be going on with a product like this.
You know, you mentioned that. We've spent a lot of time over at the Home Server Show developing those forums in a way that act that way. And it's just so much more helpful when you know you're going to be in a community where you're not going to get some jackball who's going to, you know, flame you for asking a question. And certainly all forums are not perfect, but I applaud you guys over at Subsonic Forums for keeping that helpful, because it's a lot nicer to go to a forums like that and not have to worry about that. So, you know, a lot of our guys that listen, I know a lot of the Home Service Show folks listen here at Home Tech, and certainly they appreciate what Dave has done over at the Home Service Show forum. So take a peek at that. I assume is that subsonic.org to get over?
Yes.
To get over to their site, just subsonic.org.
Yes, and any Google search of Subsonic will probably bring it up as one of the new one of the first or second Subsonic. Yeah, it's the number one response at the search. If you type in Subsonic, you'll see free music streamer, and that's www.subsonic.org.
Yeah, very cool. Well, Gary, I appreciate you. We took a little bit longer to go through that, but you know, that has been something I've been interested in, and I know we've brushed on it several times on this show. We've talked about it several times on the Home Server Show, but never really done a beginning to end kind of in-depth what it looks like, what it takes to do it, what some hardware requirements, some, you know, some bandwidth requirements. So I appreciate you walking me through that. If folks are interested in doing that, all that information will be on the show notes. And of course, Gary's a listener and Christian's on the show. So if you have any questions that you want to get to Gary, you can just send them to me, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Okay. Any other follow-up on Subsonic before we move on to your Evo 4G?
Yeah, I just remind everybody that it's highly adaptable to any hardware platform. It'll run on Linux, it'll run on Windows, it's Java based, so it's cross-platform, and no matter how strong or weak your hardware is, there's a place for it on your hardware. And if you want more out of Subsonic, you might just need to move up to stronger hardware. But even if you don't have very strong hardware, it'll certainly work well as a music server. So, you know, it's a good fit for almost everybody.
Yeah. John Zadler asked, you guys can run it on a Windows Home Server 2011 platform as well. Would that work?
Oh, yeah. Okay. In fact, actually, the instance that you're seeing is on my Windows Server 2008 R2 box, but it's actually running in a virtual server, which is running Windows Home Server 2011.
Okay. All right.
In two gigabytes of RAM.
Wow.
So
that's not bad.
Yeah. That's what it's running. And you're seeing what kind of response. Somebody's watching Iron Man right now. So, and that's 1080p video.
Yeah. So, who in chat is watching Iron Man? That's what we want to know. That's pretty cool, though. So head over to Gary's site. We'll leave the link in the show notes. Guest will get you in anytime. I mean, even after the show, that login will work. Okay.
Yeah, I leave it open. So far, I haven't had any problems. And one of the neat things that it does is that you can set different privileges for different users. So, like my guest. User login has the ability to listen or watch but can't download. So I'm not a torrent site.
Yeah.
But if I gave you your own login, I could make you an administrator. I could give you download privileges. So there's also a lot of flexibility built in to tailor it for what privileges you want each user on your site to have.
That's very cool. Well, you know, just from the response of the folks in chat, some excited listeners. A couple guys said they were going to give that a shot tonight. I think you've done a nice job of presenting that very well. It was Jazzer J who was out there watching Iron Man, so I appreciate you saying that. But that is kind of cool. I mean, I'm not a guy. I don't rip any of my videos. I don't listen to any of my MP3s outside of the home space. I'm kind of a Pandora user. I don't mind my music in random, in random sets. In fact, that works really, really well for me. So that's not something I've messed with a lot, but I certainly understand the desire to kind of, build your music pool, especially if you're a guy who buys a lot of music.
Well, the other thing, too, that you might notice when you visit the site is at the top of the left column, there's a section for internet TV radio. Hmm. So, like, I have some of the radio stations that I listen to on a regular basis. If you click on the arrow, it'll give you the audio stream coming off the website of that radio station.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Well,
there
you know. Yeah. That's one of the neat things I like about it is it consolidates all this type of thing, and you also have a podcast collector.
Now, that would probably be handy, and maybe that's something I should look at because I've had real problems with BeyondPod on Android working regularly. I bought the app, and sometimes it wants to work for me, and sometimes it doesn't, and then I end up going over. I know if I reboot my phone, it works, so I've got some kind of conflict between BeyondPod and Android, and so I go over to Stitcher to listen to the podcast. I haven't been pleased with my podcast catcher at this point, so maybe there's an option there.
Yeah, I don't use it that much, but I had set it up and tested it. I don't have it set up on this site right now, but yeah, it works great.
Okay. Oh, well, very good. And I'll remind folks as well that Christian is developing an add-in for this that is kind of one of his many summer projects. And that kid's incredible. Showed us some code two weeks ago. Flipped his camera around and showed us a little bit of the code, and he's got a little work to do on the wrapper, but he's got, you know, he had some code going, and it was a lot of fun. So I think his goal is by the end of the summer, by the time he goes back to school or early September, that he's got that add-in at least out in some form of beta for folks to try. So I would assume if you're in the Windows Home Server environment, or if you're not, Subsonic works, like you mentioned, on any of those platforms, and folks could go out and give it a try, if they've got an old piece of hardware sitting around that probably needs to be at least 3 or 4 years young at this point, if you get old, right?
I wouldn't hesitate to take one of my old single-core Athlons.
Really?
with a gigabyte stick of RAM.
Okay.
And it's not a demanding platform. Right. You know, the software doesn't demand a lot of the hardware for audio. So to serve up the audio, it doesn't need a lot of horsepower.
Okay.
That's why I say, the platform that you put it on is only going to limit the upper end of what you can do.
Right.
But you can do a lot with a very, very simple and antiquated platform. I see guys that are using old laptops. You know, the guys in the forums will say, "Yeah, I had an old laptop, and I just nice. I ripped the monitor off, and I run Subsonic on it." You know, so like I say, and I've had it. I've actually put it on my Atom tablet, and just to see how it would run, it ran fine. You know, I've got a little Atom, my little Atom dual core Asus tablet. I don't have it on there now, but, you know, this is a little 10-inch tablet. It runs a dual-core Atom, and it's got 2 gigs of RAM. It runs fine on there.
Oh. And so, as a server?
For audio, you know, for music.
Right.
I wouldn't want to be trying to serve 1080p video off it, but for music, it runs fine.
Oh, very cool. Well, good stuff. And again, if folks have questions on that or want to get a note over to Gary, just send me a note, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and I will get that way. Although I think the easiest way to get a hold of you is just to sign up for an account over at Subsonic Forums. And you said you are GJ51 over there.
Yes.
So, perfect. Hey, well, an hour has gone by like that, but I do want to talk to you about your phone, because you bought the HTC Evo 3D 4G on Sprint. I saw that phone for about 20 minutes. A buddy of mine bought that, and he showed me he took a couple pictures on it. I was a little skeptical of the 3D. Not bad, actually.
It is. It's amazing. It's surprising, because I'm the same way. I'm thinking, big deal. It's a gimmick. Who cares? Yeah. I don't use my phone. I don't buy my phone for the camera.
Right.
It's nice to have the camera if I'd like to have a picture of that, and I got a phone in my pocket, and I could take a picture with my phone, but I don't primarily buy a phone because of the camera that's on it. So for me, it wasn't a big issue, but and then I saw it, and I'm like, this is it's kind of cute, It is kind of funny.
Well, the one picture I saw that was not the examples. They give you 5 or 6 example pictures, right? That.
Yep.
To you can see the 3D. He had taken a picture of a guy in the office, and the guy was doing this pose, where his hands were out like this, kind of. And the office, the back of the office looked flat, and then it looked like someone had cut out a cardboard of him and then pushed it forward in the picture. It wasn't quite, that picture was not quite the super 3D. Now, I wasn't expecting super 3D from the phone, right? But that initial picture that I saw was a little jankety. Have you taken some 3D photos, and has your experience been any different?
No, like I say, it's more of a novelty thing. I was surprised that it did have a reasonable 3D effect at reasonable quality without being like something you had to like cross your eyes to see properly.
Right. The old crossword puzzles in the newspaper.
I really kind of half expected that it would be like, all right, what do you got to do? Tilt it at just the, but no, it's It's all right.
Now, did you find the first time you looked at it, it did take your eyes a second to kind of adjust to the 3D, and then once it adjusted, it was really 3D. This is my experience. And then when I looked away, it took me a good 6 or 7 seconds, maybe 10, for my eyes to kind of readjust. Have you found that experience to be true as well?
Not too much. Okay. I mean, I was very surprised that it worked as well as it did, and that it was as easy to, you know, visualize the effect of it. And
now hold the front of that up to your camera, spin it around so people see the two cameras in the back. Yeah. So it's got, there you go. You can see that there. It's actually got two cameras, one on top of the other, that take those 3D pictures. And that's 3D camera as well as video, right? It shoots 3D video?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, I've been, yeah. let me make you full screen here. Let's see if I can do that.
Get more light on it.
There we go. Okay, so you're the big guy now. Yeah, there you go.
That's a pretty good angle.
Yeah. You have a cover on there, or is that the...
Yeah, that's an OtterBox Defender. And it's funny. My daughter had an old flip phone that she's had for like 3 years that she absolutely loved. It was an LG Musique that I bought when she graduated from 8th grade, I think, when she went into high school. Yeah, we got her first cell phone when she went into high school. So now she's going to college. It was time to upgrade her phone after 4 years, you know, she'd like get like 2 hours of battery before she had to recharge. So I said, well, what do you want? And so she goes, oh, Dad, I love your phone. And of course at that time I had the Evo 4G.
Right.
So I said, all right. I said, but they're coming out with a new one in a couple weeks. So if you can wait a couple weeks, I'll get you the latest and the greatest. So that's what we did. And I took her into Sprint and I got her the Evo 3D. And she absolutely loves it. All her friends, you know, oh, wow, that's right. The coolest thing ever. Mm-hmm. And while I'm getting her phone and I've got the Evo 4G, the sales lady, she says to me, she says, you know, she says, let me check your account. She says, you can upgrade your phone for $50 if you want. And I'm like, you know, for $50.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, why, you know, why not? Because like my 4G was starting to get that light leak problem at the bottom of the screen.
Okay.
And it was in good shape and it worked really well, but it was over a year old. So I said, you know, for $50, sure, I'll go do that. And I did. And I don't regret it, but in all honesty, I kind of, the 3D thing and the photo thing isn't all that big a deal to me. This is a little snappier, a little faster. But for everyday use, I actually like the look and feel of the 4G better than the 3D. And maybe some of that is the fact that I did put the OtterBox Defender on it, which adds a little bit of heft and a little bit. But even before I put that on, just the dual camera thing and whatnot, that Evo 4G just has a sleeker feel to it. And
it's very thin. It's very thin. It gets thicker towards the bottom. But my oldest son has the 4G and the Evo and has really liked it. Fits in your pocket nicely. It's just a nice phone. Have you had any? What kind of problems have you had with the new phone since you got it? Have you had any significant problems?
Yeah, this one, you'll get a kick out of this one. I've been saving this story for a while. And this goes to the classic support story. One of the things that I absolutely loved when I got my Evo 4G was the fact that, I don't know if Christian's mentioned it before, but one of the things that we've done with our servers in the house is that we've set up, what's the name of it? Where our home website is on.
Domain?
Huh?
You set up, what do you mean?
I'm trying to remember, you know, it's like, you know, as you get older, of course, the short circuits much easier.
No, I know.
My calendar is set up on Windows.
Exchange?
I know.
You're on Exchange?
Nope, not Exchange. Oh. The other one. What's their other technology there? SharePoint. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got a SharePoint set up for our internal use that has our family calendar on it so that any computer in the house can, we can all put our stuff on the SharePoint calendar. Everybody sees everybody else's appointments. So we eliminate conflict right away. So the neat thing, I had the phone that Christian has right now was the phone that I had, which was the HTC Touch Pro 2. And wouldn't you know it, I've got a Windows phone, Windows 6.5 it was, and I can't sync the Windows 6.5 calendar to the SharePoint calendar. It will, the Windows 6.5 phone would only sync to the default calendar, which would be your local desktop calendar. But it wouldn't sync with the SharePoint calendar.
Okay.
So now I get the Android phone and I pull up HTC Sync for Android, and guess what?
The same problem.
No.
Oh.
You can sync to the SharePoint calendar.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm like in seventh heaven, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The only problem is that after you do it the second time, it crashes Outlook.
Oh, no.
So I'm sitting here going, you know, just my luck. You know, yeah. I finally get what I want. It finally does what I want. It'll sync my contacts, my calendar. But then after I do it the second time, Outlook starts to crash on my desktop and I can't get it to load. We had to redefine the profile in order to get Outlook working.
Yeah.
So I finally said, you know, enough is enough. So I called HTC support.
How'd that go?
Oh, this is fun. I call HTC support and I talk to this woman and I tell her I've got the latest HTC Sync and it's crashing my Outlook and I've got this problem. And you know, oh, well, Mr. Johnson, let's see. Well, what version of Outlook and what version of Windows do you have and what version of HTC Sync and how many times has this happened? And, you know, and I'm explaining to her that I've been using this since I had my 4G. This has happened several times. And, you know, all the menu items say I'm supposed to be able to do this, but every time I do it, it creates a problem on my desktop for Outlook and then it won't do the thing again. So she talks to her engineers, puts me on hold and all that stuff. So after a half hour on the phone with HTC support, HTC Sync worked with Microsoft to develop this program. So we're going to send you to Microsoft. Okay. So a half hour later, I'm at Microsoft, obviously Microsoft India. And the young lady there is going to take control of my computer, and she's going to try to attempt repair. Is it okay, Mr. Johnson? I take control? Yeah, sure, no problem. So I let her take control of my computer. She checks everything out. This is about a half hour of looking at HTC Sync, looking at Outlook, looking at all the definitions, the templates, the whole nine yards. She said, well, Mr. Johnson, this is actually, well, going back a little bit, when I first contacted HTC support, it was in China, and after 30 minutes there, they sent me to HTC USA. Mm. 30 minutes with HTC USA now sends me to Microsoft India. I spend a half hour of Microsoft India, who says, you know, Mr. Johnson, we're going to have to send you to our support center over in the States.
Right.
So now I end up back in Redmond, Washington with Microsoft. And you know what the guy tells me?
What?
We can fix that for you, Mr. Johnson. That'll be $49.95.
Oh, they wanted $50 for it, huh?
Yeah. So I says, now let me get this straight. You collaborated with HTC to develop the sync software that would enable this phone that I paid $500 for with the software on it to connect to the Outlook software that cost me another $500. And because the software that you wrote on each end doesn't work, you think I should pay you $50 to fix it for me? Well, yeah. I said, and what if it doesn't work? And what if you can't fix it? Oh, well, then we wouldn't charge you. I says, well, gee, that's really swell of you. I says, but, you know, I think I've already spent enough money, and I'm not going to spend another $50. Are you going to try and fix it for me or not? Oh, well, I can't. I have to, you know, okay, not a problem. So a day later, I get an email to fill out a survey regarding HTC support. You know, were you satisfied with the support? Did we solve your problem and the whole nine yards? And I unload, of course, and expound the whole process and say, you know, I'm not about to spend another $50 on stuff that I've already spent a fortune on that doesn't work. So lo and behold, God bless them, to their credit, the next day I get a phone call from HTC. And you know what the representative tells me?
What?
Yes, Mr. Johnson, we're aware that this doesn't work. So I spent 2 hours on the phone.
Yeah.
To get to some guy who wanted me to charge me $50 for something that you know doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's the left hand not knowing what the right hand's doing. I think the lesson learned in that is only pay when you absolutely have to, or and then don't. Yeah, those kinds of situations with support. I had my Dell laptop. I bought a Dell laptop for my wife, and the within, oh, I don't know, a week or maybe of the warranty being expiring, the motherboard went bad. And so I called. And, of course, before they would help me, they wanted to sell me, you know, some extended warranty. And I'm like, well, I'm under warranty now. And they're like, I know, but it's going to run out. And I'm like, well, but it's still under warranty right now, right? Well, yes, but you should buy. No, just fix it. And every time they called me, you know, there's big money in extended warranties and things like that. And of course, they sell that. We were before the show tonight, you and I were talking a little bit about the Skype application on the phone. We don't have time to go through it, but you had mentioned in an upgrade that there's maybe some video enabling of Skype, and you're running Froyo on that droid?
No, this is actually 2.3. What's the one after Froyo?
Yeah, it's 2.2. Well, 2.2. I think I'm running Froyo 2.2. I don't know what 2.3 is. I should know that.
No, gingerbread? It's the next one. Gingerbread.
Gingerbread?
Yeah, it's gingerbread.
So I'll have to look into that. I have been intrigued. 4G is supposed to be here in Omaha anytime. They said April, and then they said June, and then they said August. And so I'm hoping that August that we get 4G turned on here with 4G and maybe some video. It'd be really interesting to see what I could do with Skype and conferencing on the phone. So I've got some high hopes for that. One last thing. We're running out of time, but one last thing I wanted to chat with you briefly about. We'd mentioned this earlier in the show, and that's hard drives.
And, yeah, I did an analysis, and I put them in the show notes that I think right now your best bang for the buck is to actually move to the 3 terabyte hard drives.
Really?
Yeah, I just bought a Seagate 3 terabyte drive for $175, and they threw in a free DVD burner. So that wow. comes down, and this is a 7200.
Did you need the burner?
Huh?
Did you need the burner?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know what? It's new and it's in the wrapper. And if somebody comes in and wants their computer repaired, I can charge them $50 for it. So yeah, absolutely.
Right. Okay.
But it came down to basically, you know, $60 a terabyte, which isn't too bad for a 7200 RPM SATA 3 drive. And the Seagate 2 terabyte XT is $140 on Newegg. So that translates to $70 a terabyte. So the 3 terabyte drive is actually $10 a terabyte cheaper. And my favorite data drive is still the Samsung F4 at $79 is $40 a terabyte. But you can get a 3 terabyte Hitachi DeskStar 5400 RPM drive for $120. So that's $40 a terabyte. So if you've got the, what is it, the EU, UEFI, whatever BIOS that'll recognize the native UEFI 3 terabyte drive, then, you know, if you're going for data storage, the 3 terabyte drives, if you've got the BIOS that'll support them, is really as affordable as any of the other drives out there. And then the other thing that I was looking at earlier, I got an ad from Newegg, and the latest, come on, where is it? The latest SSDs, they got the OCZ 120 for $249 for 120 gigabyte drive. So, you know, we're fast getting to that point where, at least for somebody like me, I'm either looking at the 3 terabyte drives or I'm looking at an affordable SSD for a desktop as a boot drive. So at 120 gigabytes for $249, it's starting to get close to that range of affordability that I'm probably going to go with that rather than a spinner on a high-powered desktop.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the little laptops and in a high-powered desktop certainly is the right application for those SSDs. And I'm looking at them hard. I you know, I just upgraded some RAM, and I don't know. I should wait. It's working. It's one of those kind of things, right? You know, you don't fix it if it's not broken.
There you go.
And I keep there's plenty of things for me to spend my money on. You know, that's for sure. And it can be an endless hole.
It is. And I, you know, for me, it's a little bit different situation in that I had someone who soaked up the information faster than I could give it to him.
Yeah.
And that's really what stimulated my investment into all the networking infrastructure that we have, is the fact that we recently sat down with one of the leading IT colleges in computer science and IT. We looked at the curriculum at Carnegie Mellon. We looked at the curriculum at Marist College, which is sponsored by IBM. They're right outside of Armonk in New York, and IBM funds Marist College's IT program, and they actually fund like 12 full ride scholarships for promising IT students.
Nice.
So we went through the curriculum, like everything they teach and what was taught in each class. We could identify 2 classes where Christian might learn something.
Oh boy.
So, like I say, it might have been a lot of money invested, but I think the payoff will be when he gets to college and
the
professor shakes his head and goes, what'd you come in here to learn?
Right. Yeah, so, he's pretty amazing. We're pretty fortunate to have him here on the Home Tech Podcast. I sometimes wonder why he stays.
He genuinely enjoys it. He really does.
We have a good time.
He's a giving kid. He likes to share and help people, and he's just got that spirit about him that he's more than happy to help anybody who asks for help.
Yeah, well, he's certainly the brains behind the AverageGuy.tv from a site perspective. He's put a few minutes into that, and he just does everything so fast. He just sits down and it's done, and he's given me code and said, "Here, work on this." So I'll take the code and parse it over the weekend, and by Sunday night, I send him a note back and say, "Hey, I got this thing figured out now." Now, he had it all figured out. He just wanted to see me learn it. and so it's been kind of fun. He's been the teacher and I've been the student in a lot of the stuff we've been doing. But
that was the thing that amazed me about 2 to 3 years ago. I bought like Expression Web and a few other tools and started giving him the keys to websites and things like that. And it just amazed me how he would sit in front of that monitor and he would stare at the code and you would just see his eyes light up and go, "Oh yeah, that's easy."
Yeah.
And I'd be sitting there going, "I don't even know what the hell he's looking
at." I know.
like I say, about 3 years ago, he went by me in the fast lane, and I just said, what the hell was that? And yeah. He's been looking at me in the rearview mirror ever since. Yeah. So
that's kind of humbling, isn't it?
Whatever you need, you know, you need one of these, sure, we'll get it for you. Yeah. You know, that's primarily why we continue to invest in and experiment and have the fun that we have. And,
yeah.
And it's been a father-son project that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, that's great. I think there's, you know, and we're not the parenting podcast here, but you and I have talked about this off show in the past, and I think one of those things that's really, really important to do with your kids, you know, our kids are about the same age. Mine are a little bit older than yours, but is that when you see that kind of promise in them, when you see those things that they really enjoy, buy them, beg, borrow, steal, put it on credit cards if you have to, give them all the opportunity they can to do those things which they really enjoy. Now, that doesn't mean that they do the things that you enjoy, that they do the things they enjoy most. And we've done that with our kids, and it has been fantastic. And not one of them has done the same thing, which is kind of amazing. I had an athlete. I have a computer science kid. I've got an artist. They've all come out. We're going to take my middle son to Kansas City in a couple weeks, and he'll start the Kansas City Art Institute, funded most of that himself through scholarships and grants with his art. Wonderful. And I never thought, I mean, if you would have asked me 10 years ago if art would have put my kid through school, I would have said, "Are you freaking crazy?" You know, not a clue. So, you know, Christian happens to be good at the PC stuff, at the code, at the infrastructure, and he's going to be a powerful enterprise guy someday. I can see that in him.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah,
and that's what I told him. I said, you know, it's not just being a good developer. It's not just being a good network administrator. It's not just being a good security guy. He sees it all.
Yeah.
And I said, your spot is going to be the guy that's supervising all those guys in those individual departments.
Yeah.
Because you know all of it pretty darn well.
Right.
So, you know, I think if he really hones his developer skills, I mean, I struggled to figure out how to log into SQL Server for like 3 years. This kid figured it out and put it on a database in 3 days.
I'm right,
like,
I know.
What the heck are you? And I'm still like, you know, are you ever going to show me how you do that? You got Dad, forget it.
Isn't that great? They just blow past you.
But yeah, like
he'll be a CTO. He'll be a CTO someday. Yeah, there's a lot of promise there. So, all right, enough. Whenever you and I get together, it becomes a Christian love fest.
Yeah, it is. He's a good kid, and he deserves it.
Yeah.
You know, he really does.
Yeah, well, good stuff. Well, Gary, I appreciate you coming out tonight and talking to us. It's always good to have you on the podcast. I honestly, before we started the show, I said, well, if we go 45 minutes, you know, I always underestimate how long these things are going to go. But hopefully you enjoyed it as much as I did. I'll remind folks, if they, again, if they want to make comments or get information to Gary or have a question for him, easiest way is probably over at the Subsonic forums. But you can send an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. You can find us on Facebook. If you want to do that, just go over to Facebook, search The Average Guy Podcast. And I'll remind you again, we're moving our RSS feed over the next couple of weeks, and I've posted the new one out at theaverageguy.tv. If you manually set up your podcast to download to some device like the Zune player or something like that, you want to come out to the site, grab the new feed, and input that in over the next, I don't know, 4 weeks. I will replace that. Hopefully in iTunes, if you have iTunes, I'll be able to just swap that out and you won't notice any difference in that. Okay, it's been a great show. Gary, again, thanks again. We'll have Andrew and Christian. No, Christian's out one more week, right?
Yes.
So we'll have Andrew back next week. I've got Gordon Schmidt and his friend John Hughes on the show. We're going to talk about home automation. And so if you want to come out again, John Hughes is actually a developer of software for home automation. So it'll be fun to talk about the nuts and bolts around some of the more advanced. I've been surprised at the advancements that home automation has made. And that stuff just keeps getting better. So join us next week, Thursday night. Join us 7 o'clock Central Time for the Home Tech Podcast. Gary, thanks again. And have a good night.
Welcome, gentlemen.